Hello and welcome to Inside Iraq. I'm Jassim Azawi. The election campaign in Iraq is over, but the political horse trading will continue for months to come. Early results indicate that none of the three large blocs will have sufficient votes on their own to form a new government. To achieve that, they will be compelled to create new alliances despite their ideological differences. Thus, history might just repeat itself with another sectarian-based government. The election has put Iraq on crossroads and engendered many crucial questions. What will happen to the country when the U.S. forces leave at the end of 2011? Will Iraq become a dominion of Iran? Will the Kurds seek independence? Will the current constitution be rewritten? But before we start the debate with our three guests, I am joined from Baghdad by our reporter, Mike Hanna. Mike, what do the initial results indicate?
Well, Jasmine, by this stage, we were expecting to have some 30% of the national vote, which would have given us a fairly accurate trend as to which way the balloting was going. However, there has been a delay in the count. It is taking a long time for results to come through. What we do know at this stage is a sampling of results from the south. We are hearing there that the bloc headed by Nouri al-Maliki has established a handsome lead over the other two major blocs operating in that particular area. Once again, though, this is a very small percentage of the vote that has been counted there, and very dangerous to see any clear trends in the voting at this particular time. Likewise, we've just received results from Diyala in the northeast, and as well as from Saladin province, north of Baghdad, the largely Sunni area. There we see a very strong showing by the Iraqi party headed by Iyad Alawi. There's 17% of the vote has been counted in those two areas, and showing that Iraqia is showing very, very strongly there, that being the secular-based bloc, and that is giving a strong showing.
Mike, the polls before the election as well as the initial results indicate that no one bloc will be able to form a government on their own simply because they don't have the votes in parliament. Have the political leaders indicated their willingness to create alliances despite their political differences?
Well, I think the common thing among all the blocs has been that they are open to do business with anyone. As you correctly say, no single bloc will get enough support within parliament to be able to form a government by itself. But more importantly too, and this must be stressed, the government itself is a vote of 50% plus one vote in parliament. However, before that, there needs to be elected a president and a speaker of the house. Now, that requires agreement by two-thirds of parliament, which is a very high proportion indeed. So the first part of the horse trading among the factions is to establish that two-thirds majority within parliament to be able to enable the bloc to put the president in place, the speaker in place, who will then call on the largest bloc in parliament to form the government, that bloc hopefully having that 50% plus one vote. So it's a very, very dangerous situation, opening itself up again to the possibility of sectarian factors coming into play. But with this horse trading that we are going to be seeing in the days, weeks, possibly months ahead, first of all, there has to be agreement on a president, on a speaker. Only after that can we get the parliament forming a government itself. So there are a lot of stages that go through here, which will be relying on agreement about individuals. And this is where the sectarian threat largely lurks.
Mike, thank you very much. To discuss the election and its ramification, I'm joined from London by Ghassan Atiya, Director of Iraq Foundation for Development and Democracy, and from Washington by Laith Kubba, a Senior Director for Middle East and North Africa at the National Endowment for Democracy, and from Islamabad by Robert Fisk, the Middle East correspondent of the British newspaper The Independent. Gentlemen, welcome to Inside Iraq. Robert, let me start with you. Your recent article about Iraq, you praise Iraqis for going to the polls while bombs exploding all over Iraq, and yet you cast a measure of doubt and perhaps even cynicism whether Iraqis, and more importantly, the leaders of the Iraqi political blocs, will be able to translate this goodwill, this good gesture by Iraqis into reality and into progress.
Yes, I think there are two things here. First of all, by the way, when the Americans have, quote, withdrawn, they're still leaving 50,000 troops behind. But I think there's a danger, you know, that we're going to get caught up into the constitutionality of this and how many, what was the percentage swing here and there, as if this is a sort of ordinary European-style election. My doubts are that you can really have a serious election when you're under foreign occupation, and the Iraqis are, with tens and tens of thousands of foreign troops on their soil. The same applies to Afghanistan, the same applied under the French way back in Lebanon, the British did it in Cyprus, they did it in Northern Ireland. My suspicion and my fear is that however democratic the vote may be, it will be sectarian if it is under foreign occupation. And that the issues at the end of the day here are always going to be, when are the Americans going to go? Not the combat troops, but all the troops. And I think that that is very much what we're talking about. And for example, Iran wants to see the Americans out of Iraq. The Dawa Party was nurtured in Iran. We forget now that the wonderful Dawa Party, to which we bow the knee of respect in democracy, was not that many years ago seizing Western hostages in Beirut, trying to blow up the Emir of Kuwait, attacking the American embassies, the American French embassies in Kuwait. This is a grouping which has direct umbilical links with Iran. I don't actually think that Iran wants to overthrow or create chaos or anarchy in Iraq, but that connection remains there. And as long as the Americans remain, these will be the strings and the issues which we have to contend with. Sectarianism, sectarianism, sectarianism is already there. That was what the election was about. That's what the election in Afghanistan was about. And then we had to pretend it was fair, even though we knew it was false.
Leith Cooper, the American presence in Iraq notwithstanding, to what extent, as Robert Fisk said, Iraqis will be able to escape the sectarianism? Is sectarianism and sectarian quota is going to be the destiny of Iraqis for generations to come?
Well, all the points that Robert raised are valid. I think we need to keep an eye on the big picture. And the big picture, there has been a real transformation. Slow, painful, full of risks, true. But there has been real transformation in Iraqi political landscape. I think voters have been awakened. Over the last 5 years, I think initially voters were all polarized by sectarian ethnic identities. We're seeing an awakening of the voters. That was not only manifested itself in the provincial elections, but I think even politicians like Maliki and others have fine-tuned their message and rhetoric. New alliances emerged. I think, by and large, we're seeing voters pushing the political elite towards a national, central, moderate position. We do not hear the rhetoric of the Dawa Party on anything to do with Islamic State or broad Islamic agenda. We're seeing politics, maybe raw, maybe rough, but I think we're seeing politics. I would argue sectarianism has not disappeared, but it is on its way out. We're going slowly and painfully move towards real politics in Iraq. And I think Iraqis deserves a lot of credit. Despite bombs, over 130 bombs went off on the day of the elections.
Ghassan Atiyeh, is this a genuine transformation among Iraqi political groups and political leaders, or this is basically changing their tune simply because the provincial elections last year indicated that enough is enough?
Jassim, to start with, Iraq is still not out of the wood. The problem are there, and the American realize this. The question is the incremental changes that will bring stability to Iraq. As an Iraqi, as any Iraqi or ordinary Iraqi, he thinks in terms of stability, where he can have his job, he can go along. He is not thinking in big slogans. The fact the election took place, no doubt better than 1925, logistically and the way the manner it was done, this is a plus. The second question, will the party concerned in this election will accept the result if it is not to their liking, or are we going to see a repetition of the Iranian scene when the opposition defied the result and accused the government of rigging it? This is we cannot tell unless we know exactly the result. The other thing, Iraq is basically divided and sectarian. This is a fact. The question, how to deal with it, how to help Iraq survive and grow on the situation. by simply cursing the darkness is not a solution. The Palestinian had election under the occupation, and the election was considered fair and acceptable. Other countries, in Japan or in Germany, they had elections under occupation. So this is not a question, really. The question is, we have to take it according to the Iraq situation.
Leaving the election under occupation aside, Robert Fisk, there are many minefields will be facing Iraqis. Not least of them is this constitution. It has so many minefields in it that only by rewriting it, or only by agreeing to rewriting it, it will resolve issues. We have the question of Kirkuk. We have the question of the representation, a proper representation. So do you see a measure of maturity among Iraqi political leaders given the last 5 years?
Well, I see a large measure of maturity among ordinary Iraqi people. I mean, I was there for the 2005 election, which was much bloodier than this one. And they are a very brave, tough people. We knew that anyway. I mean, they were fighting for so many years, but they turned out to be brave during elections. I think, though, there's another issue here. I mean, we've just heard, of course, quite correctly, that under Israeli occupation, the Palestinians had fair elections. But when it turned out that the election results were not what the West wanted or what Israel wanted, we decided to turn against the Palestinian people. And what will be interesting to see here is whether, in fact, in Iraq, the West accepts the results of a democratic election. That's my problem about occupation. At the end of the day, the occupiers will make the decisions. They did in the West Bank and Gaza. When Hamas won the elections, we didn't like those elections anymore because those pesky Palestinians voted for the wrong people, you see. We wanted the democracy, but we wanted them to vote for who we wanted them to vote for. Well, let's see how we respond when we do have the election results from Iraq. Look what happened in Afghanistan. We wanted a real democracy, and then when it turned out we weren't going to get one, we wanted to keep Karzai. So we congratulated him. Obama actually congratulated a man, a president in Afghanistan, who had not actually won an election because it was fraudulent. These are the issues I'm getting at. As long as you have foreign powers controlling militarily, financially, economically, socially your country, I don't think democratic elections count. That's why the sadness and the tragedy is that the Iraqi people themselves are the only mature and decent people involved in this election.
Laith Cooper, let's get into the nitty-gritty of this election. Inevitably, there will be political alliances created between perhaps the three or even the four large blocs, al-Maliki, the prime minister, Ayad Alawi al-Iraqi, as well as the Itilaf, which is Ammar al-Hakim. One way or another, they will be including the Kurds. To what extent do you think they might find a common ground, given everybody is pulling in different direction?
I think we're seeing the emergence of politics, and I think so long as it is politics and not violence, we are still moving in the right direction. It might take time, it might be messy, but the most worrying thing if it breaks down into violence. Two important developments. One, amongst the Kurds, the vote is split, and the emergence of this new Goran, the change group or party led by Nusheirwan Mustafa, that is a significant development that is going to alter the dynamic of how Baghdad deal with the Kurds. So that's one important element. A second important element, Ayad Alawi has a lot of, in fact, the majority, I think, of the gains he had in his bloc are mainly from the Sunnis in bordering areas with Kurdish areas and a lot of disputed areas. So he will be under tremendous pressure from his own constituency and bloc not to go far away from national Arab demands. So I do believe also a third important reason, not all those who were elected this time were clean cut from the same political, from the bloc of the political leader, because a lot of people ran independently or voters chose people other than the usual names that and faces that we have seen in the last 5 years. So the dynamic inside parliament is going to change. I think by and large, we are going to see a shift towards the center, towards Baghdad. And I think the Kurds are going to find the difficult choice for the first time that Baghdad is getting its act together. Their negotiating position will be slightly weaker. I think this turn, the transition has been done, and the position of the president is going to be a nominal, an honorary one, rather than a real one. He will not have, there will not be a president with two deputies with voting power. All this has ended, and the position of the prime minister is going to become the real power that is going to decide which way the government will go.
Ghassan Al-Attiya, since Laith Kubba mentioned the Sunnis and they boycotted the election in 2005, to their chagrin, they realized that you have to be inside the tent rather than outside it in order to affect change. But now that the prime minister is going to be perhaps the major mover and shaker in this new period, to what extent the other blocs, in order to make him a prime minister, they are going to insist to tie him up? That is exactly what Al-Ittilaf, the alliance of Ammar al-Hakim, said. From now on, we will not accept any unfettered political power for the prime minister.
Let me point the following issues. First, the election of the president at the first round will need 2/3 majority, but the second round with a simple majority. The other thing is, with the prime minister needs a simple majority, 50 plus one of those present. This will make things easy. However, the three positions, as in 2005, most probably they will be dealt with as a package, all of the three of them at the same time, so they can reach an agreement. But we cannot really tell unless we see the final results. If the final results is acceptable to the parties with little here and there, this is a great development. However, if the result and the fact that they delayed the result the way it is delayed, this doesn't augur well. If the result will not be acceptable by one group or the other, yesterday Ammar al-Hakim in an interview, I think with the Jazeera, he said that according to him, al-INA, his alliance, will be the second, only 7 seats less than al-Maliki. This is totally different from Alawi group. They expect to be the second. How they will react, I am receiving messages of discontent and objections.
Robert, yes. Fisk, let us step away from the minutiae of the Iraqi election and look at the broader picture. You are a student of history. You know very well Iraq has always been the football between the Roman Empire and the Persian Empire. And throughout century, Iraq has become the battleground for all these major forces. Do you think this election is going to change, somehow is going to keep Iraq away from Iran and perhaps pull it back into the Arab fold? How difficult is it going to be for Iraq and for Iraqi nationalism to reemerge and go back to the Arab fold?
Well, first of all, I rather suspect that the battle is between Iran and the West, not between Iran and Arab nationalism and the Arab fold, as you put it. It was very interesting, wasn't it, that when Maliki's people and basically, let's be sectarian for a second, I'm sorry to say, the Shia tried to stop Baathists, people with Baathist backgrounds, from participating in the election. This was very similar, was it not, to the Committee of Experts in Iran, who also have the right to ban, for various reasons, certain candidates in elections. I thought that was a bit chilling, although I noticed that none of the commentators or analysts covering the election, this election, actually chose to mention this. Look, Iraqis, and you know, if you look at the Kurds, they feel more like Arabs than they do like Turks, I suspect. So it would seem when you're in Kurdistan, anyway. I think that, you know, the Iraqis are Arabs, and they've always known they were Arabs, and they're not going to suddenly start becoming Iranians. They're not Persians. It's not the same people. What I do fear very much is that as long as the West, the successor to your Roman Empire, or I suppose my Roman Empire, has such enormous power in the Muslim world, things will always be skewed, and people who are on the earthquake plates, like Iraq or Lebanon, are always going to suffer for it. I mean, my own feeling, I've made it clear before on Al Jazeera English, is that until militarily the West leaves the Muslim world, we will not see an end to violence. Violence might continue, but at least it won't be of the same intensity. And I think that the Iraqis are caught up playing this honourable, brave
yes.
game of democracy in the midst of crashing temples and collapsing worlds. And that's what makes me so, you said cynical. I'm not sure I'm cynical, but I do see this as a very tragic part
yes.
of the world. And we keep wanting to inject democracy when what we should be talking about is justice. Justice for Palestinians, justice for the whole issue of the Kurds and,
yes,
and the Kirkuk area, if you like. Justice for the Shiites, justice for the people of the Gulf. That is what we Westerners do not want to speak about. And that, I think, is why
yes.
Iraqis
yes.
did go to the polls. But I don't know if that's why the politicians were interested in.
Ghassan Al-Attiya, What are the possibilities that Ayad Alawi and Nouri al-Maliki, they might split the difference between them, and each one of them will rule for 2 years and then hand over the mantle to the other one, just for the sake of keeping the country together?
I very much doubt this. We don't have the tradition to accept such compromises. Alawi thinking himself as a president, as a prime minister, and he will never accept other than that. Thus, Alawi will try to seek to make an alliance with the Al-Hakim group and with the Kurd, and then will come with a majority. However, this will mean that he will be more in line with Al-Hakim and his secretarian position and the Kurd and their nationalist one. Thus, his own group will have difficulty, especially in Mosul and Salah al-Din, and then he will have to face a split, a division in his within group. If he can secure and he the position of premiership with the help of the Kurd and Al-Hakim, even with the loss of 50% of his parliamentary group, he would do that. But if he is not sure he can be prime minister, he will not do that, and he will prefer to be in the opposition.
Laith Kubba, from your knowledge about Iraq, have Iraqi politicians reached the maturity to think along the line of responsible opposition?
A lot of them, as you know, colleagues or ex-colleagues, my judgment is that we will see in this election that the voters chose new blood, new faces, and I think there will be an emergence of a new class of people, maybe less seasoned, less known, but not from the hardcore years of opposition to Saddam Hussein. I think Iraq now has definitely, by now, entered a new phase by which it needs people who think of the nation, think of the people, think of developing the country. And I have my doubts that the old class politicians can really see the country through. They still have a role to play because they're influential, but I think their grip over power has been weakened a great deal. There has been changes in the electoral law two or three times with the open list. Voters have emerged wiser. The constitution is heading a different way. So I have more reasons to be optimistic. Yes. That they'll be on their way out.
You're optimistic, but our last gentleman, Robert Fisk, who is going to close the show for me. Robert, what will it take for your pessimism to be evaporated? What are the indications that Iraq is finally on the right track?
Well, two things. First of all, I noticed you used the revolving power system as a possibility of getting away from sectarianism in Iraq. I'd point out to you that that is exactly what Tito tried to do or planned to do for his post-death Yugoslavia. There'd be a Croatian presidency, then there'd be a Serbian presidency, and we all know what happened to that in Yugoslavia. Look, I think that at the end of the day, the optimism, if it exists there, is that Iraqis are not actually sectarian. I hate to use this as the parallel, but during the Iran-Iraq war, the Iranians constantly asked the Shiites of Iraq to rise up, break the army in half, and overthrow Saddam. And in the end, the Shiites preferred to fight alongside their Sunni brothers against Persia. And I don't think that they did that because they thought, oh, he's a Sunni and he's a Shia. They were Iraqis. And I'm not saying that Saddam managed to create that nationalism. He did not. Iraqis have shown themselves historically as not being a sectarian people. And that's why they actually did vote, I think, because they didn't believe it should be a sectarian country. But I repeat what I said before, as long as you have foreign occupation, which you do and we will continue to have after 2011 in Iraq, I think that the occupying presence and the occupying powers themselves prefer sectarianism and will continue to keep it going.
Robert Fisk, Laith Kubba, Ghassan Atiyah, gentlemen, thank you for being guests on Inside Iraq.
Thank you.
To watch the show online, please visit our website, aljazeera.net/English. We have reached the end of this show. Join me next week when we take another look inside Iraq. Until we meet again, this is Jassim Azawi wishing you a great week.